Hello, everybody. I'm Del Shores.
And I'm Emerson Collins, and you're watching The Del and Emerson Show.
Straight talk.
Real gay. I was just quick and to the point.
Yes.
Abrupt gay.
We got it down, though, Emerson. It took us about 6 weeks, but we got it down.
It's fine. No, it's like a quarter's worth of shows, and we're finally figuring all the things out on this. I just almost couldn't remember what day it was. Friday.
It's Friday. And I'm a little bit giddy because we got a really great show today. And we have a big announcement that we've just been busting a gut to tell y'all about. So you're still going to have to wait a little bit. But there's a lot of hints behind me. How do you like my backdrop? Isn't it very busy?
It is. There's a lot going on. I'm like a modern, simple. And yours is tchotchke and
gay
character.
It's like gay threw up all over my wall. But look, but you got some pictures on the wall over there now. I don't know those before it was just like it looked like a prison.
Well, I tried to tell this last week. Okay, because Del and I work on FaceTime all day. We call each other on FaceTime and I set the phone down beside me and I look over at him. So when we started doing the radio show, I put the computer in the same spot where my phone was, and I was sitting in this chair sideways for no reason.
Oh.
For 6 weeks, I've been sitting in this chair sideways.
And you're the smart one.
Not always.
Okay, I have to show one more thing to the audience real quick. There she is. She's behind me. If you see Juanita, she's got her mask on. But she is dealing with the cigarette as well. I swear to God, Emerson, I saw a man on the street exactly like this the other day with his mask pulled down and a cigarette and him smoking. And I said, that is Juanita. That is so Juanita.
There's a photo early in the corona with Ben Affleck with his mask like up here smoking. And then I saw online the other day somebody selling masks for when you're ready to go back to bars with a hole in the center where you could put a straw. And I was like, a lot more people be using that for a cigarette.
That's what I think Juanita would have a hole. I think she would have a hole in her mask, but I didn't want to ruin the mask. It's a backup mask in case, you know.
But it's also, as someone said online, a little bit like having a hole in a condom to pee through. You know, like sort of defeats the point.
Yes. And we always go to that. We always go to that.
Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to the show. Whether you're watching on YouTube or on Periscope, on Twitter or on Facebook, please share the broadcast across your universe. Invite some people to come join us. We do have a very special show today. Our guest is the multi-talented writer, director, producer, star of television, stage and screen, Michael Urie. And we have a huge announcement that you have to wait till the middle of the show for, because we think that shit through.
Like, yes, Nikki, you got to stick around.
But also, we see your comments. If you have questions, write them in. We'll see them. We didn't get to it last week, and I wanted to chat about Drag Race a little bit.
Oh, yes. It's on tonight. I'm obsessed. I'm obsessed with this season. I really love it.
It is. We're down to the top five.
Oh, no. And your friend is doing well. She's gone, right? It was that thing where I thought she was gone, and then, oh no, and there's two, and then, okay, yes. Oh, she was my favorite one-woman show. That was so, she was wonderful, Jackie. Just crazy, crazy good.
He's really smart, and it's such a, I hope he makes that into a full show, because that story of having a dad that's so accepting and an Iranian mother that's not, and him playing the two characters with himself in between would be such a great, you know, short one-act show.
It blended the comedy and the drama, and nobody else did that. And also, he stood on stage and commanded it. That's what I really loved.
Yes. I did love Crystal's, though. The, like, bonkers nature of, like, I'm this stripper instructor, because that kitty litter dance, I was, like, peeing myself laughing.
Pretty brilliant. That's Crystal is the surprise for me. I did not expect it's the transformation that Drag Race does so many times that takes you from this level to this level.
But it feels like for me, like Jada Essence Hall is on the upswing headed towards like a showdown between Gigi and Jada. And Jada has the momentum behind her as Gigi sort of settled in the middle. Like, I feel like that's the final we're headed towards.
Well, I say, you know what I think, and this is, I always say this to actors, fear will cripple you. And I feel that with Gigi. I feel that Gigi has just, fear has come in. There was a confidence that has evaporated in the last few episodes. So anyway, and have you watched the celebrity ones?
Yes. Okay. Full disclosure. I didn't watch the first one because I looked at the list of the three and I was like, who?
Okay.
So I only watched the second and the third ones because Vanessa Williams, obviously, that's a celebrity.
Yeah. But
what I loved about the all women one was Lonnie Love getting really vulnerable and emotional as this hysterical comedian and talking about, you know, not necessarily being perceived as like a woman, but being more just seen as a comedian. I thought that was really vulnerable and lovely of her to sort of show and share, and surprising.
Yeah, and it was also the parallel to drag that she brought in, I thought was just kind of brilliant. And I honestly thought she should have won. I did. I mean, I love Williams, but you know, she and RuPaul have a history, and it would have been awkward.
She's been a judge on the show, and the problem is Vanessa is flawlessly perfect. Like, I knew she'd be fantastic, and she was fantastic. But the surprise of Lonnie pulls at your heart. And then this last week, I thought was the best episode yet, with the big comedian, Matt, what's his name, from Ninja Warrior?
Yeah, he was.
And great. Alex Newell, same thing, sort of being vulnerable and talking about their own journey.
And then the guy from Schitt's Creek, which I love him on Schitt's Creek. I was shocked at him on this.
Dustin Milligan. Okay.
I'm glad you were fans
of Schitt's Creek before it exploded big. And we went to, I think, the season 4 premiere at the Arclight just as fans. And the whole cast was there. And afterwards, we tweeted Dustin, was like, that was so great. And he was like, I loved the People's Couch, which was very exciting.
Oh.
But I loved him as this quintessential, literally movie star, handsome man, talking about wanting to put all that aside and living in it and reveling in it. I think that's such a great example.
Well, you know what I loved about it is, because a lot of times we, you know, I think that people who are artistic, who are in the drama club in high school and who are in the plays, they are perceived as less than men, less than masculine, and even if they are straight. And he really played to that. He really exposed that part of growing up, and how now he's not going to be scared of that. He's just going to embrace the feminine side that people perceived him. And I thought that was just rather brilliant and wonderful, and we need straight allies, and I love him more now.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's turned the upswing, and also people were unsure of the first episode. It's almost like they should have let off with one of these and let that be like the slightly weaker, you know, third episode.
That should have been the pilot of it, or that I think that one was the strongest, because you kind of it was kind of weird to have the women. You know, I grew into it, but I was going, oh, women? That's okay. So
to show that, like, literally anybody can be a drag queen.
Or a drag king, as they did at the beginning. So, okay, well, if you don't watch Drag Race, you've just hated the first 8 minutes of our show. But we have a big announcement coming up, and we have some news.
We provide variety. All right, on to the LGBTQ news and nonsense.
This first story, it's like...
this is my story.
Oh, wait, did I skip? Oh, yes, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Emerson. I just, I railroad right past you. Go!
All right. Well, presumptive Democratic nominee Joe Biden did a Zoom fundraiser Wednesday night hosted by Cory Booker. And one of the attendees, Vlada Knowlton, a mother of three, one trans child, asked how he would protect trans people from unjust attacks and discrimination. Biden has spoken at length about these things and said he would work to get Congress to pass the Equality Act. He would rescind the Trump military ban on service by trans people and seek to end conversion therapy and called the practice sick. He endorsed the idea of gender neutral markers for voter registration, saying you ought to be able to just put X on a sex and be able, you don't have to explain a damn thing. If you're a registered person in that place, you should be able to vote. And that follows him tweeting in response to the murder of a trans woman in Puerto Rico, the 10th such murder this year, we cannot be silenced in the face of rising violence against trans people of color. Like the recent tragedies in Missouri and Puerto Rico, It's our moral obligation to end this epidemic and ensure everyone can live open and proud and free from fear. And I just think it's great and important. You know, you think back 4 years, 8 years ago, the idea that trans people would be this much a part of the conversation from nominees mm-hmm. and in the political process just demonstrates progress as we work towards achieving those legislative agendas.
Absolutely. And then on the other side, in Virginia, we've got a Representative Denver Riggleman, I think that's the way, Riggleman, is facing a primary competitor, and the GOP is turning a blind eye. Conservatives are targeting Riggleman for officiating a same-sex wedding in 2019. Now, after Riggleman officiated this wedding, three GOP county committees voted to censure him. Last November, the district committee voted to pick the next congressional nominee through a convention rather than a primary in a move targeting Riggleman. So now he has this challenger from Liberty University. And if you don't know Liberty University, that's Jerry Falwell Jr.'s university. Athletics director, he's the athletic director there, Robert Good. He says a number of district supporters in leadership positions recruited him to run against Riggleman. Good announced on Wednesday that he has 62% of the district delegates, meaning that he will likely now defeat Riggleman in the convention. His website said he has a biblical view of marriage. He opposes a transgender bathroom mandate, and he will defend religious freedom. Oh, it just goes on if he's elected. And then he also says that Riggleman does not reflect conservative values of this district. Now, what happened was Riggleman officiated a June wedding for, I'm not going to say these guys' names right, but it's Anthony LaCounty and Alex Piscarino. They're staunchly Republican, log cabin Republicans that Riggleman, they're in his congressional district. So they got married in a vineyard in the foothills of the Blue Ridge Mountains. And Riggleman's statement was, my real belief is that government shouldn't be involved in marriage at all. But if it is, everybody has to be treated equally before the law. And that is part of my Republican creed. And it also comes down to love is love, which I'm wearing the T-shirt. But I don't think Riggleman had, the gay pot plant on his T-shirt. Yeah. Anyway, it's just he says, I'm happy to join two people together who obviously love each other. But, you know, here's the deal, Emerson. Let's talk about this just for a second, because first of all, you have these gay log cabin Republicans who ask a Republican to marry them. Yet Republicans don't endorse us, do not embrace us. And it just like creates this shitstorm. So
it's like a loss at every level. It's like you're a log cabin Republican. You want a Republican to officiate your wedding. Other Republicans get mad at that Republican for officiating your gay log cabin Republican wedding. And then they try to get that Republican out of office to get a more conservative Republican in. How many different ways do you need them to tell you they don't want you?
They don't want you, but I have to say the positive of this story is this Riggleman character, he's saying the right things and he's calling them out on what their creed says. So in a way, you know, I always say, if you're going to fight for our rights within, if you're going to be a Republican and a gay Republican or somebody who supports gay rights, then get in there and fight and make statements like this, because it's so often what we do not see, even if people believe it.
Amen. So. All right, next, Kayla Methvin is a lingerie designer, and she is also an heiress to the Kentucky Fried Chicken fortune through her grandfather.
Did you say Kentucky?
Yeah, I did. You gonna let it go or not?
No, I'm just like, I just love it.
She has reportedly launched a program to help employ LGBTQ people who have lost their jobs during the epidemic, while raising $1 million for LGBTQ charities and social organizations. She wants to hire LGBTQ people, domestic violence survivors, and people in the sober community through a newly conceived independent contractor program with her organization PLUR, which stands for Peace, Love, Unity, and Respect. The independent contractor program would hire members of these communities to work flexibly, independently, and remotely with her lingerie brand. And she said, I want my contribution to the world to be the soldier spreading the message and true meaning of PLUR. I aim to use my voice as a philanthropist. It's my dream to make a difference in the world. And I just love that because I feel like as a trust fund heir, I might just, you know, travel and sit on my yacht. And no, she got that good KFC money and she's out truly making an effort to employ and create opportunities for marginalized community members. And that's amazing. So eat that chicken proudly.
Like Shelley Winters did in Singing in the Rain and left the bucket there in the sea. Call back to a previous episode of the Della Dimerson Show.
Yes.
I love that story so much. Who knows it? And no, it's, I think it's true. Anyway, all right, onward. We got the Anderson Cooper story. I mean, news. He was on the Howard Stern show and he's had this baby recently, Wyatt, and he announced that he's co-parenting the baby. I didn't know they had broken up. I really didn't. With Benjamin Maisani, is that the way you say his name? And Howard Stern says, don't you want a clean break from this guy? Anderson Cooper said, I really don't have a family. So my friends become my family. And this is somebody that I was involved with for 10 years. He's a great guy. We didn't work out as a couple, but when I was a little kid, it was just me and my mom and my brother. And my mom was not the most parental person. I wish some adult, after my dad had died, had stepped in and just been like, you know what? I'll take you to a ball game, or let's go out to lunch every now and then, and let's just talk. And no one ever did that. So I thought if something happens to me, or even if something doesn't happen to me, if more people love my son and are in his life, I'm all for that. My ex is a great guy, and it's good to have two parents if you can. Anderson Cooper's father died when he was 11. His brother died of suicide when he was 10 years later, and his mom died last year. So his family's gone.
I love that so much because it speaks to our found families that's already such a big part of our community anyway, and having a broader idea of the kind of family you can build, and that this man that he has love for, that their romantic relationship doesn't work out, doesn't mean you can't be great and important in my life and be a part of the family I build for my kid. I think that's amazing.
And it's so classy the way he didn't trash his ex. Like, you know.
Well, I mean, it'd be awkward if he trashed him and then said, but help raise my baby.
I know, right?
I just don't know how
he's
that
single,
would work.
Y'all. There's hope. There's hope for us.
All right, y'all. Well, this next story. So Entertainment Weekly put out its Pride cover yesterday, and I'm going to show it to y'all while we talk about it. Oh, look, I'm so fancy.
Look at you.
So, and it's an illustration by artist Jack Hughes. It includes 18 stars, and they said it was meant to be the past, present, and future of the LGBTQ community. So if you're looking at it, the top row is Janelle Monáe, Freddie Mercury, Kate McKinnon, Ricky Martin, John Waters, and Dan Levy. The middle row is Ellen DeGeneres, Rock Hudson, Laverne Cox, Lily Tomlin, Kristen Stewart, Lil Nas X, George Takei, Ryan Murphy, Cynthia Nixon, and Marlena Dietrich. And the bottom row is RuPaul and Elton John. Now, if you look closely, they also put in some Easter eggs. Dorothy's Red Slipper, the first EW cover featuring K.D. Lang, Ryan Murphy's wearing Liberace's cape, and then one of the big things that blew up the internet is if you look right between Lil Nas X, see, I think I can do it like this, and George Takei, there is a brick. Now,
there's a what?
A brick.
Oh.
You see it right there between Lil Nas X and George Takei, right there in the background. There's a brick.
I do. I see it.
Clearly meant to reference, along with the ruby slipper and the first brick thrown at Stonewall. Well, the internet sort of lost its mind at that. Obviously, there's been an enormous amount of discussion over the years about who threw the first brick. Was it a brick? Who was there? Who wasn't? So there was a lot of feelings about who was and wasn't included in this cover. And then people started coming for the artist himself. And look, we as a community have a difficult time agreeing on anything. And that's great and okay and leads to great things. Who is and it should and shouldn't be on this? You could talk about that for months. But then people started going after the artist And he said, look, they sent me 18 people and I drew these and they said there's more coming. And he said, I only have this much time. This is all I can do. And I think once we get to the point of like attacking the artist for not including who you think should be included, I feel like we've lost the plot a little bit.
Yeah, I do too. And I thought that was, I didn't realize that was George Takei. I thought that was the Ross Matthews from, because it's small. I was like, oh, it is George Takei. I think it's beautiful. I love it.
Well, you know, it's once again, just a demonstration of all the ways that creative people are having to come up with new ways and new things to do in this time. And it's leading to lots of fun and interesting results.
So, well, all right. Okay. Well, we got more blood rejected news. We reported a few weeks ago, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration shortened the suggested abstinence period for gay and bi donors, male donors, not female, from 1 year to 3 months, which I'm good now. But weeks later, many centers are still turning members of our community away. And New York State Senator Brad Hoyleman, who is gay, and he met the new guidelines, but he was rejected by New York Blood Center May 6th. In response, the politician penned a letter to the center urging it to change its outdated screening guidelines in light of the current health crisis, which has resulted in a shortage in the nationwide blood supply. He says, I will continue to fight for changes to the FDA's blood donation guidance that prevents most gay and bisexual men from donating blood. This policy is rooted in homophobia and limits our nation's supply of blood and plasma, which I know you agree is more crucial than ever for the research and treatment of COVID-19. And then he penned another letter to the FDA and basically said that they're treating us like second-class citizens. So there you go.
Shows why representation is important, having members of our community in office who can continue to fight these things. It's good and great. One more follow-up like that one. Remember the trans beauty influencer we talked about a couple of weeks ago, Sophia Taloni, who encouraged people in Morocco to create fake profiles on gay dating apps and out men in their communities, leading to at least one man taking his own life. Well, she's now changed her story, saying that she never meant for gay men to be exposed. My intention was to humanize, undemonize, and normalize gay people in Morocco so we'd stop thinking of them as outcasts. I literally wanted people to think of gay people as the man or woman next door and to stop the negative fantasy about who gay people are, how they look like, and how they live. But last month, she told the Moroccan Times, in all honesty, I did not want to out them, but they started this war. The Moroccan gay community shared my profile on many Facebook groups and were encouraging people to report me to get my accounts deactivated. They were outing me out of jealousy because I'm successful. I have no regrets whatsoever. So weirdly, now that we have more details, it sounds like she was in a tiff with like a particular part of the gay community
and used her
social media to go after everyone with these incredibly harmful and horrible effects. And now she's regretting it.
And now has the worst sin in the world. Just blatant lies when that's like, you know, it's always interesting to me where this president, he says one thing and then he says another thing and then he says he didn't say that. And it's like, well, now you can't like.
Yeah, we saw.
We saw it. We saw it. We're not stupid, but some people are. So, all right. Well, you know, I love a good glory hole story. And
I mean, who doesn't?
I mean, and a good Catholic glory hole story. This is this story cracked me up.
Oh, so, guilty glory holes.
So anti-LGBT and Catholic activists, oh, they're up in arms, and they now know what a glory hole is, thanks to Dan Savage, who is one of my heroes. The U.S. Based Catholic lead, which has always opposed LGBT equality for decades, are just clutching their collective pearls after Savage joked with Bill Maher, I think you're going to see more people experimenting with online sex. Until about an hour ago, I was going to predict the golden age of glory holes might return because initial tests that show that there was not virus in semen or vaginal secretions. Now, y'all listen up, because they've changed that. If you could carve a hole in the wall, get people together and power wash through that hole between uses, people could have sex that way and glory holes would just come roaring back, and it won't be just for the creepy closeted priest in truck stops anymore. Oh, but a new study actually did find the virus in semen. Oh, y'all. So the jury is still out, he says.
I mean, let's be honest, because if you could get it from breathing on people from 6 feet away, I don't know how you use a glory hole and don't breathe on it.
Well, but there's a wall. So the breath.
But in your mouth. What are you doing? Looking at it?
But does it come up to your... You just don't touch your face. Wear a mask with your penis in the hole.
Stop. That's not realistic.
Well, anyway, the rest of the story is this: that Bill Donahue, who launched an attack. This is he's from the Catholic League. He's the boss there. He attacked a mayor and called Dan Savage a homosexual pervert.
Thank you.
Yes, exactly. Bill Maher has a long history of anti-Catholic bigotry, and as bad as he is, no anti-Catholic in a public life is more vulgar than homosexual buffoon Dan Savage. Many normal people have no idea what a glory hole is, so please don't be offended by the description offered here, because it is necessary, otherwise the offensive remark makes no sense. So here's what the Catholic priest told his flock. Uh-huh. Homosexual perverts specialize in anonymous sex in many places, and among them are public bathrooms. They like to carve a hole in the stall so they can place their erect penis in it, hoping for oral sex. My dryer's ready. They call these glory holes.
I mean, we specialize in a lot of things, not just that. All right, one more quick one before we get to our big announcement, because I think this is an important thing for us to remember. A survey conducted by the dating app Hornet with the Thomas Reuters Foundation of 35,000 men found that 30% of the respondents reported fearing for their physical or emotional well-being during lockdown. So 1 in 3 bi, gay, or trans men do not feel safe right now. The majority of responses to the survey came from Brazil, France, Russia, and Turkey, but I think we can extrapolate that to most of our community. Queer men are an at-risk group for mental health issues like depression and anxiety disorders anyway, due to ongoing stigma and homophobia, and that's according to the CDC. Alex Garner, Hornet's senior health innovation strategist, and I love that a dating app has that, stressed how these issues may be exacerbated in our demographics as forced to shelter in place with family members that may not be accepting. So, you know, I've talked about my own struggles with anxiety, but being aware of how that can really impact our community wherever we are, in addition to the regular challenges of being in lockdown or stuck at home, is something to be aware of and to check on with the people in your life and our community.
All right.
All right. Are you ready?
I'm so ready. I was just trying to see, how do I formulate this announcement? I'm just going to tell y'all a story, because I feel I'm a storyteller. First of all, I would have no career if it weren't for theater. I started in the theater as an actor. I started as a playwright here in Los Angeles, and I've been very, very fortunate that my plays have become films and that many theaters perform my work to this day. Last year, I had a great year directing my new play at the New Conservatory Theater Center in San Francisco, and then Emerson and I were off to Dallas to put this side of crazy up after we had a successful run here in LA. And then the breaks called COVID-19 came screeching to a theater halt across the nation. And we saw all of our theaters go dark. And we saw so many of them start to struggle and worry that there would be no more live theater on their stages. And I had a conversation one day with my good friend Bonnie Pendleton in Knoxville, who's the artistic director of the Knoxville Little Theater there, or downtown Knoxville Theater. And she was saying, after they had raised so much money to open a new space, that they may have to close. And I'd performed on their stage, and they had done Sordid Lives. And so I started brainstorming, and I called my good friend Ed Decker up in San Francisco at the New Conservatory Theater, and we started brainstorming. I started brainstorming with Emerson, and this is what we've come up with. We have an all-star telethon reading of Sordid Lives, the play. And Emerson, would you just tell us who will be involved in this night, please?
So on Sunday, March 31st, we will be doing a live stream that Dal and I are hosting, a reading of Sordid Lives, and y'all, everyone we asked said yes. Leslie Jordan as Brother Boy, Caroline Ray as Nolita, Beth Grant as Sissy, Beau Bridges as GW, Dale Dickey reading Juanita in honor of Sarah Hunley, Bonnie Bedelia as Latrell, Newell Alexander as Wardell, Rosemary Alexander as Dr. Eve, David Cowgill as Odell, Ann Walker as Lavonda, and Debbie Holiday singing the songs of Bitsy Mae Harling.
And Emerson Collins as Todd.
All right.
And I'm going to be reading the preacher's role. And all the money, y'all, all the money. And we're going to raise a lot of money because y'all are going to help us spread this far and wide. And we are going crazy with this. We're just going to, we're going to be publicity whores and social media whores because we want to raise so much money for these theaters. And it's going to be split evenly between 23 theaters. And you can read all of them, all of these theaters, if you go to the Del Shores Foundation. org and just hit our partners list. We chose to the people who have partnered with us on my new foundation. That's who's going to be benefiting. And we're so excited about this. And we have my good friend Olivia Newton-John, who said yes to making a statement and supporting small theater. We have Carson Kresley, we have Alec Mappa, we have Alex Ponovic, David Steen. Who did I leave anybody else?
Georgette Jones, who played Tammy Wynette in the series. Yeah. And we'll have interviews. We are doing an auction of Sordid Lives memorabilia that will be announced in a week from now. Every person appearing through the entire evening it was involved in the Sordid Lives franchise, whether it was the original play, the movie, the series, or the sequel. So we're extremely excited. And that's our news. And you're the first people to hear it. We'll put up the links for the YouTube and the Facebook for you to set a reminder after the show. The press release goes out on Monday, but you heard it here first.
And please, you know, as you evaluate your finances, please consider giving even before the telethon, because we want to start the telethon on March the 31st saying we have already raised this amount of money. I wish I could turn my computer around. I'm so scared I'll do the y'all, you have to see. Look at my, just this is my, just my dining room. Look at all that shit. And then my living room. Can you see over there? I'm doing it wrong. Oh, there's the living room. Just full of costumes and props that I've pulled out of my garage that we are going to have autographed and sell.
So
100% is going to these theaters.
That's right. The foundation's not taking any money. All of this will go to just these 23 theater companies that are partners with the foundation, whose work focuses on LGBTQ plays, or they featured Del's plays. So it's our part we can do for a community that supports us.
And see what's behind me? Y'all recognize that from A Very Sordid Wedding? That's going to be for sale. I mean, we got so much. I've got the tombstone of Peggy that in my garage that we're going to put up for auction. Who doesn't want a tombstone in their living room?
I mean... That's a thought. All right. We've been patiently and excited waiting in the background, and appropriate there because on his own, single-handedly, he raised over $200,000 for Broadway Cares Equity Fights AIDS with a live stream hour and 40-minute one-man performance of the Tour de Force show that he did, Buyer and Seller by Jonathan Tolens. And you know him from film and television and countless theater productions. Please welcome to our little show, Michael Urey.
Hey.
Hello.
Hi. Michael.
This is the best news.
I didn't wait
for this reading.
And we wanted to have you on this show when we announced it because you are our kindred brother and have done such a similar thing to help. You live on the stage like so many of us, and we're worried.
I know. Yeah. I know. It's really scary. I mean, the theater is going to take such a hit. Like the idea, you know, you think about the theaters that that you're talking about in LA and the theaters that I'm working in here, like in New York off Broadway, sometimes people have to get really close to each other to see these plays.
Yes.
And like, you know, stand in line for a bathroom or go up a rickety staircase. And it's really scary to imagine what it's going to feel like to come back. At the beginning of the quarantine, I thought when we go back to the theater, it's going to be like hugs and everyone's going to be so happy. But now it's going to be like cautious, I think.
Well, I think so too. And I'm worried about that because I'm thinking about when I saw you at the Mark Taper Forum doing Buyer and Seller and the brilliant, brilliant performance that you gave. How I'm within 6 feet of me were six people.
Yeah, exactly.
How do we do that?
I know.
You know? And by the way,
and also,
I said May, by the way, everybody's saying I said March the 31st. Obviously, it's not March the 31st. It's May the 31st. Just to clarify that.
It said March on the graphic. I mean, I said May on the graphic.
Yes, it did.
But also,
that's because I'm in charge of those things.
Right.
And I'm in charge of my mouth.
But what you're talking about is so important. You know, so much of the breeding ground of new ideas and innovation in theater starts in intimate theater. And yeah. Those are the venues most challenged, whose budgets are the most ticket to ticket, yeah. That are also going to struggle the most with figuring out solutions. You know, the Taper could say every other seat if we need to for a while.
Yeah,
but an intimate theater with 36 seats can't do that.
Yeah. Well, what are they going to do to make a profit? That's what I was thinking about that. Because, I mean, you know, Emerson and I, with our company, we self-produce many, many times. And you think about how hard it is to even turn a profit anyway in theater. And now suddenly you have every other seat. Can you charge twice as much for every other seat? No, you can't.
It's not really, no. I mean, yeah, I guess.
Well, and then are you pricing, you know, people, a certain kind of person, out of theater completely? You know, we face challenges at every turn in making this work.
Yeah, well, I'm so glad you're doing the play. I mean, you know, you emailed me a couple of questions about streaming, and I thought, I hope they're doing Sorted Lives.
Well, the movie 20, you know, it just turned 20 years old, and we thought it was natural. So many of the theaters, many of the theaters that we're supporting with this have done it, and they said they sent us all their production stills, and it's just gonna be a really beautiful night, and it was so great. I got to tell you, I was really scared going to a lot of these people and going, will you do this? And they all, yeah, like that.
Everybody. Of course they did. How could they say no to you?
Well, also right now it's awkward to say no to stuff because everyone knows you don't have anywhere to go.
Well, that's true too.
Because you can be like, point. When somebody says I'm busy, the with what answer has to be really well thought out.
But you know, it was Sorted Lives, the TV show where we first met because I stalked you, Del.
I know.
I became obsessed with that TV show, and I tracked you down and stalked you and made you go to lunch with me.
We went to lunch at Basic. See how I remember.
Wow.
I remember where we met on that patio. Yes.
Yeah.
And it was I've loved watching your rise and all the success that you've had. You're such a brilliant actor, and we must work together at some point in our careers.
Love to.
But also, you've done, what's so impressive about what you've done is how much you've become involved in so many other aspects and facilitating work for other people, you know, directing our friend Drew Drogi's show. You're producing the Pride plays for Playbill, aren't you?
Yeah. Yeah. So this is the second year. thanks for the setup.
Tell us about that.
This is the second year of Pride plays. Last year we did it at the Rattlestick. And when I was talking about, like, you know, these theaters with like rickety staircase and line for the bathroom, I'm thinking about the Rattlestick, which is where we first did Buyer and Seller and where we did Pride Place last year. It's my favorite place in New York, but it's up a rickety staircase and you have to wait in line on stage to use the bathroom. So like, it's gonna be like weird when we get back in there and everyone's wearing masks and gloves and stuff. So, I ache for that place, but like, I mean, it'll be back, and I mean, it's a matter of time. It'll survive, and
also, Michael, I mean, there's a whole thing with equity now and the safety of performers, which of course we should be worried about that. So I think there's going to be a lot of one man, one woman shows because you know we touch on stage.
I know.
We breathe,
or I could just have to quarantine together. I don't know. But
how is Pride Plays working this year instead?
So Pride Plays is going online with playbill.com. We were ready to go. We were already like, we opened submissions this year, and we chose about 15 or 16 new plays and then a handful of older plays that we were going to, like, revival type plays that we were going to do at the end of June at the Rattlestick. And so when we realized we couldn't gather at the end of June, we decided to postpone or maybe revisit the older plays and focus on the new plays. And we gave everyone the option to either go online with us, or we would punt them, that's a football term, to next year.
Not familiar, but I comprehend.
and a lot of them said, most of them said yes to this year. And so they're going to do 29-hour readings on Zoom and have a private presentation. It basically turns into a workshop. Instead of like a big show, but it was never a big show because it's the Rattlestick, so it's like never more than 100 people, but we didn't want to like blow it open because they're new plays in development. And then every Friday in June, we're going to program something in the evening, like a queer work in the evening. And then the last Sunday in June is going to be this big musical like extravaganza of queer musical theater.
That's amazing.
That is so ambitious.
It's insane.
I'm like tired right now with just us planning this, and we've been planning it secretly. So it's been
like, Michael, just coordinating this with 23 theater companies and 14 actors, and like one live performance is making my brain bleed. And the concept of what you're doing is so impressive.
But, well, thank you. But ditto, that's a huge cast and a lot of theaters. It's really, you guys are not fooling around.
We want to raise so much money. I just hope that people will, buy our shit too, because
I always say, like I know you do, there are people sitting at home that have lots of money that can contribute to all of these causes we're all doing things for. And people that can't, showing up and sharing your broadcasts and sharing the YouTube links to the things that you do is just as important, because that helps it find other people with money.
Yes.
So there's no participation that's more valid than the other.
And you know what I learned when we were doing Buyer and Seller? Because I found out about some of the people who donated during Buyer and Seller. The one that we did for Broadway Cares in over there.
Yeah, literally.
There were people who donated I realized like people are okay to pay for theater.
Yeah.
People will pay. And like, if you give them theater, even if it's online, even if it's different, they're willing to pay. And that was really beautiful. And also, if it's for a good cause, I'm sure they're even more willing to pay. But I think it's easy for them to imagine, oh yeah, I'll pay for this. I'm enjoying myself.
Yeah.
And you know what I love about it also is because it's like when we raised on Indiegogo for Southern Baptist Sissies, I celebrated every time someone gave a dollar or $5, because it brings in a village of all of this support, no matter what you can, even if your contribution is sharing a link. It's just this collective energy that I absolutely love. And I love that our theaters are all over the nation, and it's very exciting.
Hey, everybody at home.
Emerson, I want to know what it was. Did you see Buyer and Seller that we did in my living room?
Yes, I did. And now I want to talk about it from the performer perspective for a minute. Because
you're a fellow Alex Moore.
It was amazing to watch you calibrate the show. You've done it on stage. And you did it for filming with an audience. But to recalibrate the performance, knowing there's not going to be a single laugh, and to recraft the size for the stream, it had to be a fun, fascinating experience to reconceive after been doing it for so many years, but also like so weird.
It was weird.
Like you'd think about like, oh, there was a quiet matinee, but no, like people do like cough and giggle occasionally. This is just like, oh, Ryan's in the other room. Like that's it.
Ryan doesn't laugh at me ever.
I mean, that makes sense at this point.
And he wasn't allowed to laugh anyway. And he has seen Byron Seller a bajillion times. So like, but also that was really helpful. I mean, I couldn't have done it without Ryan, because he knows the play better than most people. And then Nick Corey, do you know Nick Corey?
I know who he is, yes.
He's another guy who played Alex Moore, and he helped me come up with this sort of like smaller no-tech version that we did a couple of months ago. So it was fresh for me. And he was on Zoom from Indiana or Illinois, somewhere. And he was like on Zoom directing me. And then Paul Wontorek from Broadway.com was in the Poconos in his house directing the sort of camera. And then Ryan was like the DP and the gaffer and the crew. And you know, also saying, you know, he was also like the guy who was like the translator, because sometimes I couldn't hear and only he could hear, and I couldn't see anything. It was nuts.
I mean, it was bonkers, a bonkers achievement.
Yeah.
But also, were you the most exhausted you've been since like the first couple of shows after doing that? Because the audience energy feeds a little bit. So this really is just you putting out the energy, trusting that it plays.
But I was fed by the audience, the unknown of the audience. Like,
okay, good.
Like I knew somebody was watching. You know, like right before we started, Paul was in my ear and he was like, there's already a lot of people waiting. And I was like, okay, good. As long as there's like people, as long as someone's watching, I can do this. Cause I did it for, you know, like I did it for smaller house. I performed that show in smaller houses, and I know what it's like to do it for, you know, a handful, maybe not a handful, but like, you know, and certainly I've done it for people who didn't love it or weren't laughing.
Or quiet.
Yeah, quieter. And so I thought I know I can do that. I know that I can like I can get through it. But it was.
But I want to ask you something. Did you by muscle? Did you hold for the laughs?
A little, yeah.
Yeah, because I know that when we shot Sorted Lives, the movie, having done the play, I built in where I thought the laughs were.
Oh, great. Yeah, great. Right.
So
smart. You want to say hi to Ryan? Hey, Ryan.
Yes, please, because I want to talk about the show y'all just did.
Hi, guys.
Hi, Ryan.
How's it going? He's making dinner. Here, I'll find
it. I watched the Frankie and Will show, too.
You did?
That's so fun. Yes.
We get the same frame. Here, I'll come over there.
Thanks for watching.
Congrats. For those of you watching at home, Michael's partner, Ryan Spahn, is an actor, an incredibly successful writer and actor as well. And they just did a one-act living room production. It was a new play, right, Ryan?
Yeah, our friend Celine.
You get
your light.
I know, it's
hard. No, I can get you.
Oh!
I'm fancy.
Right.
I'm going to hug this.
It's like backwards or something.
Our friend Helene wrote it, a little play for us to do. And then this theater, MCC Theater in New York, has launched this new online one-act play reading series. And we were able to film it together.
In our apartment. It's a play about William Shakespeare and his apprentice in quarantine together. And
during the plague.
During the plague, yeah. Of 1606. Which is when he apparently famously wrote King Lear.
Did she write this before this pandemic? Or
no,
did
she wrote it.
She wrote it like the day the article came out where people reminded the world that Shakespeare wrote King Lear during a pandemic and therefore you should get busy.
Yeah.
And she got kind of annoyed with that. And so she wrote a play fictionalizing if Shakespeare had writer's block during a pandemic.
And y'all, you can still watch it on YouTube.
Yeah. Oh, thanks. Yeah, you could still there.
What's the name of it?
Frankie and Will.
Frankie and Will.
Yeah.
Who's that?
Oh, Bitsy May. This is Bitsy May. They always like to say hello when they hear voices. Frankie.
Oh, hello, Bitsy May.
But Del, I just wanted to say that's so exciting. Wow, there's a lot of trash blowing around outside. It's so exciting about Sorted Live. The first time I ever became aware of you was when I went to my first LA Theater Festival, LA Theater Awards show, and you were receiving a big achievement award. I want to say it was in 2005 or 6.
LA Weekly, Lifetime Achievement Award.
Yeah. And they did all these excerpts from Sorted Live and from Trailer Trash, Confessions of a Trailer Trash Housewife. Is that
we were doing what was called a Season of Shores at the Zephyr, where several of my plays were in rep. It was Southern
Baptist. And then you had a play, I want to say, right when we first met at
Yellow,
the Coast Playhouse.
Yellow.
And, oh, amazing. And I heard that you had a show, and I was like, you got to see this play. Del Shores is an incredible writer. Yeah,
so different than your other plays.
It was so different. It's so weird you brought that up, because yesterday one of the actors sent me a video. They filmed it. And I couldn't find mine because my ex took it, I think. And so he was part of the producer, so he wanted a copy, and we had one. So anyway, David Calgill sent it to me, and my daughter was able to download it. And I sent it to all the cast, and just the last, I wasn't depressed enough, and then I watched the last act of Yellow, and I just like fell apart last night.
Oh man. It was a great show.
And Ryan, one of the plays you've written is in Pride Plays. Am I correct?
It was last year.
It was last year.
Yeah, that's correct.
And we were going to do a reading of it for Celebration Theater before the pandemic.
They're one of the beneficiaries, the Celebration.
Oh, great. Yeah, for ours.
Yeah.
Did you hear that it's benefiting 23 LA theaters?
Wow.
No, across the country.
Oh.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, great.
Michael.
It's basically, we were launching the Del Shores Foundation this year with a focus on finding the next generation of any age LGBTQ Southern writers, people that still live in the South that are sort of in the vein of where Del came from. But we felt like, well, we don't want to raise money for that because that's, people need money for real things. That's a new fun thing we can do in the future. But we'd already asked film festivals and theater companies to partner with us. So we went to all those theater companies that were willing to support our work and said, we know right now you need help, so we'll help you first. And we'll get back to the foundation's business once the country's up and running again. So that's where the companies came from.
The foundation is a 501c3. Is that the way you say it?
Yes. Okay. All tax deductible donations.
Everything that is given to this, and they're, and all the theaters are nonprofit, is 100% tax deductible. And I want to say something to you, Michael, because you had an influence on us in a big way for me. Your one man show that Emerson ultimately did as well in a couple of venues, and he was wonderful too. But you're such a good director. When I saw your work in Drew's show at Outfest, you inspired me that I could film my show and Emerson could direct it, because he had so much experience and he had already directed the stage production. And that the reason I wanted him to direct it, because first of all, he knows me better than anybody, and I knew that he wouldn't be scared, that he would just, you know, tell me what to do with no fear. And I couldn't, you know, bully him. So anyway, because of you,
you
filmed it, and because of Drew's play on Broadway HD, we approached them, and now I'm on Broadway HD.
Oh, my gosh.
We just ripped off your
fired us.
Yeah, we just ripped off your whole journey for six characters in search of a play. We said, oh, yeah, they did that. We can do that.
Well, Drew did another show that I produced that Tom Detrinas directed.
Right.
We had him on the show, and we talked all about.
Oh, good.
Because I went to the very first performance of it.
Happy birthday, Doug.
Yeah.
But so it was playing in New York when pandemic.
Yep. And then pandemic.
And it closed. It had to close early. It was going to close. It was closing. It was a limited run anyway, but it closed early.
What's your chihuahua's name?
Well, this is President McKinley.
She's the president.
McKinley, who appears in Frankie and Will as Friar Lawrence.
Yes. Very important cameo.
What I love is that she's a girl, and she's named President McKinley, and then Talene wrote her a character named Friar Lawrence, and she's a girl in the.
But she's giving you kisses.
Yes,
we love gender blind casting.
That's right. She can do anything.
Are the
two of you doing okay at home?
Yeah.
Like, surviving and creating and.
Yeah.
We've had a couple of rough moments, but pretty good. You know, I mean, I feel
we're having one right now.
You're like, so tell us more. It's happening in this moment.
You know, it's mostly just like, it's just a, you know, it's so, it's such an existentially complicated time. And if you go down that hole, as I'm sure you both have, like it can get dark. And we've been so lucky that we've had each other. We've had a dog and a cat. We haven't gotten sick. We haven't had any trouble getting groceries or anything. And
we've had yoga with Adrian on YouTube and Sadie Grossman's yoga from her yoga studio.
Y'all know yoga with Adrian on YouTube? She's from Austin.
Amazing.
The best.
We love her.
Yeah.
Well, and I feel like
we have to find those things that are our salvation. For me, it's I bought a spinning bike because I spin the moment it happens.
Yeah. Oh, smart.
All these online classes. But I don't know. You said that dark hole. It happens to me in the evenings. You know, it's like you stay busy and then all of a sudden it sort of hits you, the reality of all this. And we were doing a story on CNN about mental health. And I go, oh, I can so relate. My mental health is fragile right now.
Well, and it speaks to, you know, I think I've joked numerous times that it's revealed that we're all non-essential and should be staying at home.
Right.
But that in that, what all of us do and, you know, what you are both doing and what we're trying to do in using the skills that we do have to provide up entertainment and distractions and ways to amuse and entertain other people stuck at home and essential workers when they get home, that is the thing that we can do. And so what you all are doing is impressive and inspiring, and we thank you, and we're trying to do our own version as well.
Thank you, and ditto. And, you know, it's sort of like this is the work now. You know, the work is to, like, ensure that the work will be there when it can be. You know, like, if we don't help support our theaters or each other or whatever, you know, like, if we don't, like, yeah, you know, it's like, I know it's not real theater. Like, we can't do real theater right now, but, like, we can entertain people, and we can, and especially the people who love the theater. You know, like, I know that, like, we're not going to get people who don't love the theater to like really understand a reading, because it's a reading, like it's a different kind of thing. But people who love the theater love that stuff.
Yes,
they love that stuff, and it's just for them, and they're happy to have content. And if other people come along, you know, along the way, all the better. I mean, people are coming up with some pretty exciting things. I don't know if you saw Bill Irwin's thing that he did for the Old Globe last night with Chris Fitzgerald. It premiered last night. I think it's, you know, like these all kind of run for a few days and then they have to go away per equity.
I think there's an equity rule of 4 days, something like that. That's all we can do is 4 days.
Yeah.
And well, that's okay. They're working hard to work with everybody.
Oh, it's great. It's great.
Everyone's discovering new and interesting. Absolutely.
Oh, no, I wasn't complaining.
I didn't say you were. I was just clarifying.
It should go away. That's theater, right?
Yeah.
So,
it's impermanent.
But we so appreciate you. We appreciate your talent. We appreciate what you do. Thanks. And we're in the inspiration that you've given to not only us, but so many people. So we thank you for coming on our little show today.
Thank you, and to Ryan, and to President McKinley, and Barry Manilow for making a cameo.
Looks
all right,
so
bye, Michael. Thank you so much.
Oh, my goodness. I'm busy. Michael, we love you. Thank you. Ryan, it was great to meet you.
Bye, guys.
Bye. Thank you both.
Keep it up. That's all right. I'll see you on the 31st.
All right. Bye.
Bye, guys.
Bye-bye.
Oh, sissy.
He's so damn delightful.
Oh, I love him. I just love him. He's just so...
He's one of those people I would be horribly jealous of if he wasn't so delightful.
Yeah, he's done so well, and I mean, we've both have been able to hang out with him some, you know, just off of the, you know, out of what we do, and he's just a good human.
Well, so. And like so many of the people, you know, we admire, you know, he does his work, and that's a lot of work, but he produces work, and he makes works happen, and he thinks about our community. He's really an artist that speaks to it. Chuck Yates, who produced my version of Byron Seller in Palm Springs with Coyote Stageworks, is here. And to answer a couple of questions people had about the telethon, you said it, but we'll say it again. Yes, the Del Shores Foundation is a 501c3. So any donation you make between now and 4 days after the broadcast is tax deductible and will go to the benefit. And we will be posting right after the show. We'll be sending out, you'll be able to see this, the Facebook link and the YouTube link to get a reminder so you can tune into the broadcast. And the big press release will go out on Monday and you'll start seeing lots more. And we'll talk about it every week until the 31st.
So thank you all for being here today.
Wait, I didn't even do it today. Wait, I need to do a commercial.
Oh, yes.
You know, because Dell and I are doing all this work for free. If you enjoy the Dell and Emerson Show and you want to contribute to us directly, it's in the banner below. You can Venmo me at Emerson Collins or send a PayPal to beardcollinshoresproductions@gmail.com. Because we're doing this to entertain you. And if you can't contribute, we totally get it. But if you can, we'd certainly appreciate it.
Yes, and thank you for those who have. And thank you to all of you who have supported my work and Emerson's work over the years. And we're so excited to bring together what I feel is our family, Emerson. I feel like that we're bringing our family together for this this beautiful reading that we're having.
I'm also putting that information in the comments.
So, anyway, that this has been a fun show for us today, and did somebody? I can't read comments because if someone says something mean, I get irritated. I don't think they. Anyway,
he's crawled about something else. Yeah, that's all I got. We got lots more work to do after this on the foundation. So thank you for tuning in.
Yeah, we're going to blast out right now. So stay tuned and we will see you Tuesday for another episode of the Dell and Emerson Show. We've had a great time today. Thank you all for being here and we will see you soon.